Blog Talk Radio.
You pull the knife, you pull a gun. You send one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue.
Wake up, Claire! Jim's dead! They're dead! They're all dead!
Faber gonna kill you faster than a bullet.
Say hello to my little friend!
They're all gonna laugh at you!
The Brian De Palma Tribute Show, Sunday, July 22nd at 6 p.m.
Welcome to Movie Geeks United, the most popular movie talk radio show on the internet. Tonight, your beloved movie geeks speak to Perry Santos, the writer, producer, and director of the upcoming documentary film, I'm Rick James. Plus, did Transformers break box office records? Is Cloverfield the next Blair Witch Project? And why is Jim Carrey being such a Scrooge? The Movie Geeks will deliver the scoop with the latest movie news. Plus, hear about the latest confirmed guests for the upcoming Brian De Palma Tribute Show. And everybody's favorite segment, Flick Picks of the Week. And now, strap in, turn it up, and get your geek on. Here are your hosts, Jamie, Chris, and Jerry.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Movie Geeks United. This is Jamie, and we got Jerry here, too. Hey, Jerry.
Hey, what's up? How's everyone doing?
And, of course, we have Chris.
Hey there, sexy boys.
How's everybody doing this week? You have a good week? I know Chris did. He's been on vacation at the beach.
Yeah, man. He's been loving life.
And actually, on a movie-related note, who did you see at the beach, Chris?
We ran into a little friend of mine, a little lady I like to hang out with, named Cameron Diaz, actually.
Yes.
It was pretty cool. I've seen her once down there before in Anna Maria Island here in Florida. That's where my family vacations, and she, I guess, has a house down there, too. Her family does. I saw her once before, about 4 years ago, in a bikini, and then I saw her in a bikini again this year. So, in person, it was pretty cool. She's a beautiful, beautiful lady. No, we didn't want to talk to her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So did you get to see any movies while you were at the beach, Chris? Uh-oh.
Chris?
Uh-oh. I think we lost him. I think he just talked about Cameron Diaz's bikini and then he just went away.
Wait, oh no, okay.
Anyway, how about you, Jerry? When you were, working during the week?
I was working, but not that much. I had off, for the 4th and then after that. But we did go on Monday night. We saw Transformers.
Transformers. Okay.
And
that's a big story because that's a big grosser. I believe it made, over the 3-day weekend period, it made about $67.6 million and something like $152
is the so far the total gross. And everyone's, before we went on, I was over box office profits, and it's a big deal. It's a big deal, not so much, obviously, the 3-day gross, but the cumulative gross. Everyone's up and, just raving about it, and while I'm talking about that, Chris will be joining us again. Chris?
I'm here.
Okay. Okay, thank God. Okay, good. Okay,
we started talking about Cameron Diaz's bikini, and then you just disappeared on us, man.
I was talking about Cameron Diaz's bikini, and then a large Transformer came and stepped on my phone.
Oh, really? Megatron came?
Yeah, Megatron came, ate my phone, and then I had to call back.
Okay.
Did you get to see Transformers over the week, Chris?
Oh, yeah, I went and saw it.
Did you like it?
I did not really enjoy it, no.
Oh, okay.
I thought it was just extremely silly, very silly. But, it is, and this is the, decision I came to afterwards, I can't be too hard on it because it was a children's show. And in my opinion, they made a children's movie out of it, so.
It's not too hardcore for children?
It's the comical action just like in the TV show. The Transformers and the TV show used to destroy cities and the movies get so many faults that I don't even know where to start. First of all, the TV show never had didn't have human characters typically. It was just the Transformers, and I think
right.
that takes away from the movie. Not that I was any big lover of the TV show.
Yeah, I was going to say I never got you to be a hardcore Transformers fan. So
No, I wasn't a big Transformers fan, so I'm going into this movie just, you know, completely open, didn't care what they did, but I thought they would bring it more than that. Were all those characters completely one-dimensional? If you're going to put human characters in the movie, make them human characters, not these ridiculous, flat, one-dimensional characters.
Well, Michael Bay isn't very good with human beings, anyway.
Can I say, I thought this was Michael Bay's most wonderful homage to himself. I mean, I've never seen anything quite like it. And I do mean that even with our good friend in 2 weeks, Brian De Palma, I've never seen a director make love to themselves so much. And now let me say, I enjoyed this, and I did not think a year ago you told me, oh, I would have liked Michael Bay's Transformers. I would have really just gone out and decided to rent hardcore porn the rest of my life. But no, this film actually, I have to say, was of the summer movies one of the most enjoyable experiences I had. I don't know what that says about me, but I just enjoyed it for some reason.
Well, I think it probably epitomizes what summer movies have become and what a lot of people like in summer movies. This movie
and Die Hard 4 both completely epitomize.
It's big and it's dumb.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I've heard, I haven't seen it, I haven't spent $8 to go see it yet, but I've heard that it would have been great if the roles had been reversed, if Michael Bay had produced the Steven Spielberg version of Transformers, because what it's missing is what Spielberg typically brings to this kind of movie, which is what Chris is saying is missing, is the humanity. And the sense of awe, too.
It's not there. At the beginning of the movie, it starts off pretty good. It starts off with this, there's this, like, looming sense, like, kind of, you know, like an Independence Day or Jurassic Park, like there's this danger around the corner. It starts off with some real momentum, and then, I mean, it crumbles. It transforms into a turd. So.
Okay, I didn't get that. I mean, I see where you're coming from, but I don't know. You know, Chuddy, I read an interview the day after with Michael Bay on Chud.com, and, I mean, yeah, he is so in love with himself, and I guess so in love with the myth of himself. When they ask him about Spielberg, he's like, yeah, Spielberg called me up, and he gave me the hook, the thing that's about a boy and his robot. And I thought, okay, that's a great angle to go with. I'm like, if Spielberg calls you up and wants you to direct a movie, I don't care what the hook is, just do it.
Yeah.
You know?
I think that Spielberg brought him on to direct The Island as well.
Well, you know, The Island is one of the greatest remakes of a bad movie I've ever seen. The Clonus Departs horror. Let's face it, it's a remake of a really bad Mystery Science Theater 3000 movie.
Right.
I gotta agree with you, Jerry. I think The Island is probably Bay's most watchable movie. I didn't have as big a problem with it as so many other people did. But this one,
I remember you making fun of me when I told you I went to the theater to go see The Island.
I hadn't seen it at that time. I was just making fun of you because you went to see a Michael Bay movie.
You're just making fun of me because it's your favorite pastime.
Right, that's what I like to do. And I saw The Island on DVD, and I enjoyed it. I didn't think it was such a horrible movie. But this to me was right up there with Pearl Harbor. I would have readily walked out of the movie if the people I was with
really
wanted to do the same thing. Yeah, I was
really. You would have walked out? Okay, I would have walked out of Pearl Harbor, but I kept dozing off, so it was hard to walk out.
I did walk out of Pearl Harbor.
You
the
did?
Last movie
okay.
I walked out of.
Okay, more power to you. I couldn't because I kept dozing off and I didn't feel like getting a refill on a Diet Coke. But
Transformers was just numbing. I mean, it's completely numbing to sit through it. I felt like I was dozing off in the movie because I couldn't follow it because it was just action, 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 and there was just no story whatsoever. I mean, it literally is robots come to Earth to kill each other and destroy the Earth in the process.
Okay.
Oh, and there's some people involved, too.
Okay, there's some people involved. But, all right, let me ask you this then, and then we'll try to move on. Do you think this is better than the animated movie from, I guess, the mid-'80s that is Orson Welles' last screen credit?
No, I don't. I mean, it's difficult to compare a live-action movie to an animated movie, you know, especially when they're in the, you know, they're both Transformers movies. But it's been years since I've seen that animated movie, but I have seen it, and I remember it was a lot more like the cartoon show. It didn't take itself quite so seriously. This movie, like, takes itself very seriously, and at the same time offers nothing, no reason for you to take it seriously.
Yeah, well, no, I didn't get it that it took itself so seriously, but that's just me. I think I was just happy to get out of the house and away from work. And I think that's, you know, and I know that that's not a great way to look at a film, but I was with my brother, and we both, my brother actually may be a bigger Michael Bay fan than me, which is, I don't hate Michael Bay the way everyone hates him. I don't love him, but I thought this, for some reason, on this film, everything came together for Michael Bay, to me at least.
Well, you know, everybody's so rough on Michael Bay, and me included, but obviously the guy has talent. He has a talent for delivering the kinds of concepts, at least, that movie audiences want to see.
Yes.
But I would love to see if he could pull off a smaller, more expressive kind of character-driven movie. And I think, honestly, when you've dedicated so much of your career to making these big event movies, the only way to mature as a filmmaker is to go that route. It is to see if you could do something more intimate, more character-driven.
No, I agree.
I've seen with him, I don't think he's terribly interested in evolving his career. I think he has found what he likes to do. I truly think, like you're saying, he enjoys doing it. And I don't think he really wants to evolve as a filmmaker. There's nothing on his resume other than Pearl Harbor, really, that notes that he is interested in elevating the material he works with at all. He basically wants to keep making these supposedly kick-ass action movies.
Right.
I bet he will. If that's all he's going to do. I don't think he's devoid of talent either. He's talented. But I couldn't care less. You know, Peter North is talented at what he does.
Hey, don't make fun of Peter North. We were talking about, like, one of his comrades earlier, John Jeremy. But come on, Peter North. Oh, man, making fun of Peter North like that? Oh,
well, I'm not making fun of him. I'm saying he's talented, but that's what he does. He does one thing.
And he does it very well.
You guys are terrible, man.
We are terrible.
Okay, well, I guess something that we need to discuss real quick are our friends at the Dead Air Show.
Yes.
We encourage everyone to write to Blog Talk Radio. First of all, go on the Dead Air Show blog. That's located at blog.myspace.com/deadairshow2006, I believe.
Yes, I think that's right.
And you'll read a message from that. They're trying to get their show back on their old primetime slot, appearing after our show, actually, at 7 o'clock, and they're a great bunch of guys, a great show, very inventive, too, and hysterical, and they got us interested in the whole internet radio
career. Yeah, we owe them a lot, so mm-hmm. It's at least, yeah, if everyone could go do this, I mean, we need the Dead Air Show on after us.
Yeah, it's an unbeatable combination, guys.
It's great.
Like peanut butter and jelly.
Wow, okay, I didn't think of it like that, but okay.
I equate everything with food.
Okay, no, that's good. That's a good thing to equate things with. But also on that note, we have acquired a new friend, Horror Movie Fans Radio, and they're a brand new show,
yeah.
And they're on at 10 o'clock, at least 10 o'clock tonight Eastern Standard Time on Blog Talk Radio, and they're a wonderful group of guys. They talk about horror films. They're very down-to-earth, very funny, and do yourself a favor and tune in. Tonight at 10 o'clock, you'll be in for a good time.
Absolutely. I might need to call in myself tonight.
Okay.
Pay him a little visit.
That's cool. Very cool.
Also, our De Palma tribute show, you heard the promo at the top of the show. It's Sunday, July 22nd, 6 p.m. Eastern. It lasts for 2 hours. It's another epic tribute show we're putting on. We're all crazy about Brian De Palma. So we have guests lined up. We have Eyal Peretz. He's the author of a new book called Becoming Visionary, Brian De Palma's Cinematic Education of the Senses. So that'll be some interesting conversation there. We also have actor William Catt, who was in De Palma's Carrie film, as well as one of the most impressive websites dedicated to De Palma, De Palma a la Mode, the webmaster of that site and a big De Palma devotee. He's actually interviewed De Palma in the past, Jeff Baran. We also have, in final confirmations, actor William Finley, who's been in quite a few De Palma movies, actually went to college with De Palma, and we're working on scheduling him in for the show as well. And there might be some more surprises coming up as well for that show, so stay tuned. But it sounds like it's going to be a real in-depth conversation about what makes De Palma such a great filmmaker and why he's not more universally respected than he is.
Okay. I'd just like to add something to that just about Jeff Baran and his website. I have made in the last 24 hours De Palma a la Mode my homepage.
Oh, yeah.
Forget it, dude. All bets are off. This is the home page, at least for the next couple of years. The Firefox Mozilla thing is history. As far as, not even so far as fan sites go, but it's just as, it's one of the best I've ever seen.
It is the resource for Brian De Palma and anything related to Brian De Palma.
Wonderful. I mean, this guy has done a wonderful bang-up job.
Yeah, it's a terrific tribute to him. And you know, De Palma's been I think he's in his fifth decade of making movies. So.
He's already exceeded what he said. He said a director has four decades in him. So he has surpassed his own prognosis of what a director's lifespan should be. So I have to say, a guy like this who talks about the death of like conventional filmmaking and you know directors only have this such a lifespan, he's already surpassed himself in that regard. So you can't help but admire this guy, regardless of what you may think about his films. This guy is out there for the long haul. He's going to be with us for at least, I think, another 20, 30 years.
Yeah. Oh, God, I hope so. I really hope so.
Yeah, I hope so. I have a lot invested in that statement. So
movies need him. And if you think, you know, we're going to talk a lot more about this, obviously, in 2 weeks. But if you think about how movies are just, they're shot nowadays, it's very simple TV-type coverage. You know, there's no cinematic experience in a lot of films that come out today. And De Palma is purely cinema. I mean, he's and I don't mean this sexually, but as sensual a filmmaker, you know, everything feels very, very larger than life and very tactile, as there are today. So I'm very excited to talk about him in 2 weeks. Is there another film? We got Transformers. That's probably on its way to becoming the biggest movie of this summer, possibly. But what other films are up this summer that could also make a big splash that are left?
Chris, any thoughts? Or
well, I think that the Harry Potter film and those movies are pretty consistent, but this one has the benefit of being released right around the time of the book, so there's all that fervor which accompanies a new Harry Potter book. So I think this one might be considerably bigger than the others. And actually, I think it's a movie series that's getting better as it goes along. I know fans of the book don't always agree with me about that. Some people think that the first two movies were the best, but I actually think that they are consecutively improving on these movies. And from what I understand, the producers are happy with this new director, and they've hired him on to make the next one.
Yeah,
so,
David Yates directed this new one?
Right. Right.
Yeah, I agree with Chris there. They have gotten better. Really, with the third film, it really a different tone is taken. I think the problem with the first two films, and actually some of the fans of the hardcore Harry Potter fans, is that if it's possible, Chris Columbus was too faithful to the books, and just too like trying not to cut anything out, then it gets bogged down and being so faithful that the films don't. Initially, the first two don't take a life of their own, where I think the third and the fourth one do.
Yeah, the third one is really where the series, for me, like started to liven up. And I have nothing against Chris Columbus.
Oh, not at all.
You know, I do have a big affinity for Alfonso Cuarón. And
of course.
For Mike Newell, actually, I thought the fourth movie was fantastic.
Yes.
I thought it was the best one yet.
So this is the fifth film in the series?
Yeah.
This one coming out is now the fifth.
And there's six books. This last one is
seven books. Seven.
Also, there's still two more films to go.
Two more films. Yes.
Wow.
I need to get going on that too, because Daniel Radcliffe's starting to look like an adult. I don't read the book, so I don't know what age he's supposed to be at each book. I don't know, you know, from what I understand from the movies, it basically goes year by year, so it's kind of matching up age wise.
Yes.
But,
yes, it is.
But
you know, it's got to be extremely taxing, because if you think. Daniel Radcliffe and all these characters this is a major staple in their lives that they keep returning to year after year, and it's a major commitment. It's got to be.
Oh, yeah.
It's not something that you can just squelch on if you get tired of it after four or five movies. I mean,
for us, we're seeing the movie once a year or once every year and a half or something. For them, it's literally like this is what they've been doing for years.
Harry Potter is their lives.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a major commitment.
So
I can imagine
especially since this book is the last book, there really is going to be a lot of excitement for the movie, I think.
Well, I think that's a good point. You bring up a good point there.
Yeah, there's also the speculation that this final book is the one where Harry Potter dies.
Yeah, there's speculation, I guess. You know, no, it's obviously it hasn't been confirmed or anything. I think the book comes out in, like, what is it, like a week and a half?
A week and a half. I think it's July 22nd, I want to say, or July 21st is the release date.
Yeah, and I think she has, J.K. Rowling, I think she has hinted around that some characters do meet their end.
Oh, she said certainly that there will be more deaths. She said that very plainly. But, you know, who knows who those could be.
Yeah, I had some friends that just got back from, or just went up to London, and I think they were slated to see Daniel Radcliffe in his play Equus.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I'm anxious to hear how that went. And that's about as far away from Harry Potter as you can get. So apparently he has a big, you know, like nude scene on stage, which explains why I won't see it. But, you know, so they went over there to see, you know, Harry Potter, literally. Well, our guest, we're waiting for our guest to call in.
Yes.
So in the meantime, why don't we cover some movie news?
Okay, sounds good to me.
Let's start her up.
Hi, I'm Tiffany Littleton, and this is a Movie Geeks United newsflash. After an initial setback, Tom Cruise's new film with director Bryan Singer, Valkyrie, will begin shooting in Germany on July 16th. The German government originally refused cooperation with the production, citing Cruise's controversial belief in Scientology. Now, the German Film Board is not only granting location permits, they're also granting over $6.5 million in tax incentives. The film tells the true story of a German officer who unsuccessfully attempted to assassinate Adolf Hitler. Look for Valkyrie to hit screens in 2008. Jim Carrey has just signed on to play Scrooge in the upcoming Robert Zemeckis rendition of A Christmas Carol. Zemeckis wrote the screenplay for Carrey specifically in a film that will utilize performance capture technology similar to what Zemeckis has used in his films The Polar Express and the upcoming Beowulf. The cast and crew of HBO's smash hit Sex and the City are moving full steam ahead on their long-awaited feature film version. And that's about all the movie geeks have to say about that. Dennis Hopper has just signed on to star in Speed 3. No word yet on how his character survives decapitation from the first film. Transformers audiences were treated to a special sneak peek of J.J. Abrams' latest producing effort, tentatively titled Cloverfield. The film, which has been produced in an unprecedented veil of secrecy, tells the story of a group of people who struggle to survive a giant monster as it attacks New York City. Cloverfield hits theaters on January 8, 2008. Dustin Hoffman will write, direct, produce, and star in an adaptation of author Scott Turow's critically acclaimed book, Personal Injuries. This will mark Hoffman's first time in the director's chair. For Movie Geeks United News, I'm Tiffany Littleton.
Okay, that's a lot of news. That's a lot of big news.
Yeah, some good news happening. What do you guys want to talk about first?
Cloverfield.
Okay, I have not seen this trailer yet.
Oh, you, shit, okay.
And Chris, I'm sure have, since you've seen Transformers. So what what did you think?
I saw the preview, and it's funny because you mentioned that it's tentatively titled Cloverfield. Well, they don't say that in the preview. They simply don't show a title at all.
No, I got that from the Geeks of Doom website, actually, so...
I've heard that also, and but the funny thing is, no one talks about the preview afterwards. They all talk about what the hell is it called? the thing is, the preview actually does look pretty interesting, and
it got my interest. I mean,
I'll see
it over.
J.J. Abrams is involved in, because I love Lost, and I thought the third Mission Impossible was a major improvement over the second movie, and a lot more in the vein of the first movie. So
I actually thought, just going back to that, I thought by putting a TV director in charge of what was originally a TV series was the smartest move.
Yeah, it worked really well. The third movie, you know, it stands on its own, but it also adds to the first movie. I don't count the second movie at all.
I can imagine the second one, John Woo must have been going, why can't I work with Chow Yun-Fat? Why am I working with Tom Cruise? Why?
Chow Yun-Fat enjoys my slow motion and my flying doves. Well, Cloverfield, I kind of, having not seen the trailer, but only read about the secrecy and the buildup of, you know, just kind of tickling your anticipation for it, it kind of called to mind Blair Witch, and especially the fact that I suppose it's shot from video cameras. Point of view from all the characters looking at the monster or watching the monster's destruction. It's all shot from their point of view.
That's the impression I'm under so far, and that's what has my attention. I love, like, giant monster movies, so this would... I hope that's what this is, because it just looks fascinating.
However, I think it is a $30 million movie, so the comparisons to Blair Witch, you know, they stop at a certain point.
Yeah, well, that's true.
Yeah, but you guys are fascinated to know more about it?
Oh, yes.
Then I guess it worked.
Yeah, it worked. Me and my brother were very enthralled by the trailer, no doubt.
Yeah. And another piece of exciting news on there is that Bryan Singer is directing what promises to be a big, exciting movie. They say it's a cross between Mission Impossible and The Great Escape, which is the new Tom Cruise movie called Valkyrie that we open up the news with. You know, obviously the production had a lot of problems, as was described during the news segment from Tiffany, but... you know, it's good to see. I think this is probably Bryan Singer's comeback after a less than stellar reception for the Superman film.
True.
And he's even talked about holding off on the next Superman film because he's doing this one, and I think he wants to do another one after this one before going into Superman.
I actually want to say, I don't think that the next Superman movie, I don't know if it's going to happen under Bryan Singer with everything I've read. It seems that Bryan Singer wants to do this. He still wants to do the remake of Logan's Run. So, I honestly got, I'd be surprised if a Superman sequel happens sometime this decade. I don't see it happening.
Really?
Yeah, Bryan Singer's been making these Superman movie and these X-Men movies, and the X-Men movies are fine, but I think people kind of forget that he's capable of making a killer character-driven drama like Usual Suspects and even Apt Pupil.
I liked Apt Pupil. I had no problem with that.
I think it's a pretty damn good movie.
Yeah.
It benefits from several more viewings. It's got some great performances in it, particularly Ian McKellen.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah,
I'm excited about this because I think it's going to be, like you say, a return to form.
And it's also with Christopher McQuarrie, who's writing the script, so...
Right.
And, you can't go wrong with that combination, so...
Yeah, I'm excited about it, and Chris, you're right. I mean, we're talking about how Michael Bay, it would be nice to see him go in another direction. Bryan Singer's proven that he can do both.
Right.
And he's equally adept at doing both.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he's an exciting filmmaker. What are the other movie news items there?
The Jim Carrey one, Scrooge, which, I don't know. doesn't it remind you of the Grinch who stole Christmas? I mean, kind of, just like that, going back to the holiday, the short, the safe thing.
Yeah. Well, it strikes me as an excellent, it's one of those pieces of movie news that strike me as an excellent business decision.
Oh, and that it is.
Yeah, because if you think, you make these holiday movies, obviously Christmas Carol, Grinch that stole Christmas are just, you know, two classics that never die.
Right.
You're looking at year to year a very long shelf life.
True.
I mean, you can pull it out every Christmas. It plays on TV and cinema screens and cable, blah, 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 DVD sales every year.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you can't complain with that.
Are you crazy about the performance capture technology that Zemeckis seems so preoccupied with?
Yeah, that, like, what is the deal? Like, isn't that what sapped the life out of the Polar Express for everybody? It felt dead. Everybody kind of thought, well, why not just shoot this live action? I personally think the movie would have been a lot better that way.
I agree, Chris. I agree.
It was unnecessary. And I didn't realize that Beowulf was the same thing. I thought Beowulf was going to be a live action movie.
Yeah, that kind of caught me off guard, too.
I read that it was, when I compiled the news, I got it from a source that says that some performance capture technology is used in Beowulf. I'm sure it's like a character, like a Gollum or something.
Grendel, which is the character that Crispin Glover plays.
Glover plays the Grendel?
That's right.
If you're going to do performance capture on any actor, it should be Crispin Glover.
Oh, yeah, I mean, that's perfect. You know, I'm going back to Scrooge. It will be better than the number 23. I guarantee that.
I personally love Jim Carrey. I didn't see The Number 23, and I'm not going to defend some of his other movies, which are, you know, like The Majestic and
I didn't mind The Majestic, but I'm weird that way.
You know, The Number 23, they should have just cut out the 3 from the title. Jim Carrey's great. I mean, he's exceptional. You know, I think he's looking for a career comeback. All the articles say, and this is the perfect route to go.
I've heard a lot of that talk lately about how Jim Carrey has, you know, before Evan Almighty came out, everyone's like, oh, they went and got Steve Carell because Jim Carrey, he's washed up. But now Evan Almighty comes out, it's a bomb. Well, not a bomb, but it's a disappointment. And the movie's also not very good. And you hear people saying, well, Jim Carrey, smart to pass this one up.
Right.
Bruce Almighty just came out a couple years ago. It was a major success.
Yeah.
It's one of the highest grossing comedies of all time. Yeah.
What was Jim Carrey's film before The Number 23?
We can't remember. And that's probably...
Now, wait a second. Now, let me ask you. If it's Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, which is 2004, that's, you know, one of his best roles.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying, Jerry. That's a good point. He's not. How has he died off? I think it's inspired casting.
Fun with Dick and Jane was the one previous.
That did pretty well, though.
It did okay. I think in terms of, you know, we measure success differently than the box office does.
True.
Because if it's a good film, I don't care if it grossed a dollar, or if he put in good work in it. I think from an industry perspective, this is the $200 million man. He can open a $200 million comedy.
Dick and Jane did open well. It did well for...
It grossed a little over 100, I think.
Okay.
Which is the lower end of Jim Carrey comedy films, how they generally perform.
Right, okay.
I think it's the industry is on alert. You know, they're thinking, you know, your movie struggled to reach $100 million. What are you going to do now? You know, it's all this manufactured stuff. And
right.
It doesn't speak to... why he chooses roles now, which he's at a point now where he wants to be challenged. He wants to do something interesting and unexpected.
Well, he can do that. He's proven that a couple of times with, I think, Man on the Moon, The Truman Show, and especially Eternal Sunshine.
Yeah. Yeah, and the same goes for Tom Cruise now, too, because people are talking about how's Tom Cruise going to make his way back into to big movie box office gross. And I think he's very smart. I mean, Tom Cruise has proven time and again that with the proper publicist, he's very smart.
Well,
and I think career-wise, in terms of the movies that he chooses, he's always been very on top of it.
Well, yeah, I think with this, The Valkyrie, obviously, and I think for Lions for Lambs, too, I think they're very smart decisions. And let's go back to Tom Cruise. It's really funny, since... this persona with the Oprah and everything, I do think the two movies before Mission Impossible 3, Collateral and War of the Worlds, were some of the, I think, the best things he's done in a long time.
Collateral especially was a fantastic
movie. Yeah, I mean, I can't see how anyone could have a problem. Talk about an actor playing against type and doing it so well.
Yeah.
Years before that is Minority Report. And the movie Vanilla Sky, I thought Vanilla Sky was a pretty good movie, too.
I think they're both criminally underrated, actually.
Right.
Vanilla Sky, Minority Report.
And I actually prefer Vanilla Sky to Abre los Ojos, the Alejandro Amenábar movie.
Open Your Eyes.
I don't know if I'd go that far, but no, I see where you're going, though. I see.
It's just a matter of personal preference for
me. No.
I like American movies. That's just me. I like foreign movies, too, but I like big... stars in movies, and I just thought it was a more rich movie. The characters were a little bit more developed.
Right.
Whereas Abre los Ojos was just kind of a chilling little movie. Vanilla Sky was a lot wider. And
right.
No, that's true.
Yeah. It's a really important time in Tom Cruise's career, because obviously we know all the setbacks that he suffered based upon his. Public displays of crazy, and his studio dropped him. Firestone over at Paramount, was that
Redstone? Summer Redstone dropped him last summer, I guess it was.
Yeah, so he went out, and now he's the head of production at United Artists.
That's just an interesting coup right there, revitalizing United Artists like that.
And Lions for Lambs is the first big, high-profile movie I think they're coming
out
with.
Yeah, that's with a Robert Redford film with Meryl Streep and Tom Cruise. Can't get much more high-profile than that.
That's an incredibly pedigreed movie right there.
It sounds great. I love the idea for Lions for Lambs. I love the cast. I'm inherently excited about any Robert Redford directorial work, but isn't the preview a little lackluster? Does anyone else feel that way? Do you watch the preview?
I have not seen the preview yet. I know that may sound odd, but I have not seen the preview, so I don't know.
When you see it, I think you'll see what I'm talking about. It just kind of sits there. It doesn't really excite you. The preview doesn't excite me as much as the announcement of the project did.
I agree. I think it's probably a talking heads movie. Which there's nothing wrong with that, but it's hard to sell as being really exciting.
Right.
That's a good question, because that goes back to our Movies That Make a Difference thing. How do you sell something like this in this day and age?
You sell it with Tom Cruise, Meryl Streep, and Robert Redford.
Well, that's true. I wanted to go back to what Chris said, though. You know, I love Robert Redford. I love Quiz Show especially, and I know I'm in a minority there, because a lot of people roll their eyes when I say Quiz Show. But
that's his best work, Jerry, in my opinion. That's
Thank you very much. But I was I felt let down with The Legend of Bagger Vance and The Horse Whisperer, maybe more so with The Legend of Bagger Vance. It seems such a conventional movie for someone who champions the independent spirit so much.
Right. Well, perhaps I could see it with Bagger Vance. I always enjoyed Bagger Vance. I didn't take it too seriously, though, like I do most Redford films. But,
I really
like Horse Whisperer, and I think it's because it speaks to themes that Robert Redford intimately understands. And I think he did a bang-up job putting that one.
Okay, I just was just curious. I wanted to get some feedback, because I haven't talked to anyone about those films, so I just wanted to get...
It'd be really hard to find a more observant director than Robert Redford. His character observations, his little bits of business that he has actors do, they reveal so much about the character and so much about the scenes. You know, I'm thinking of Ordinary People in the backyard, when Timothy Hutton's sitting with his mother and they're talking back and forth, but not really talking, because that's how it goes with his mother. And then he just starts barking at her. Get her to wake up. You know, there are little telling moments like that in every Robert Redford movie, like a feast of them. And that's what I enjoy about Redford more than any other film director, because you get that kind of stuff.
He's also dynamite with casting. He's not one of these directors that uses the same actors over and over again.
He really moves
around. He pulls back people like Paul Scofield, who just doesn't make a lot of movies anymore, puts him in this little part in Quiz Show, and specifically has one of those scenes that you're talking about where he's just, you know, his son comes to him and tells him, oh, they're thinking that I've done this horrible thing, that I was given these answers. And Paul Scofield's just shocked to find out that it's the truth, that he really did take the answers. It's really the most touching moment of the film for me.
Yeah, it's a fantastic film. It just, you read it as a plot, and it bores the hell out of you. and I think that's why people didn't flock to it, even though it's just like The Insider. Remember how everyone was talking about The Insider being such a great movie, and it's not boring, you know, it's not. Just go see it. And they wouldn't go see it. I think the same thing happened to Quiz Show.
True.
Yeah. Our guest still has not called in, right?
No.
Well, we'll try to get our guest on a different show. His name is Perry Santos, and he's actually... he's got a new film coming out in October, I believe. It's a feature documentary film on Rick James that, you know, it involves everyone that had anything to do with Rick James, like, you know, we were talking earlier, Ron Jeremy, Linda Blair, George Clinton, just a slew of people that have great insights on Rick James. So we're hoping to get some of that ourselves tonight, but apparently something went wrong. So we'll try to schedule him on a future show. We also want to know about being an assistant to James Cameron during Titanic.
Yeah, I would love to know about that.
Yeah, and what a nightmare that must have been. we'll try to get him on a future show. And in future shows, we're going to be discussing a wide range of topics. Obviously, we have our tribute show to De Palma on the 22nd. we're thinking of putting together a tribute to some of our best character actors. You see them in all these films, but they don't get the credit they so often deserve. So we're thinking of putting that together as well, as well as a show on horror films. You know, and I think that we'll do that corresponding to the upcoming release of Halloween. August 31st is when that film comes out. So, do you get good vibes on that film, Halloween?
No. So far, yes, but it's still a month away, well, 2 months away, actually. But so far, I'm getting good vibes. But I don't. It seems I would, you know, the end of the summer, I would wait till Halloween to release it. But are they that scared, I guess, of the next Saw movie to go against that?
Does Saw 4 come out about that time?
Yeah, that's, it's every Halloween, a Saw movie comes out, I guess, is new.
I was going to ask about that because it seems like odd scheduling, August 31st.
I think people are just scared to go against that franchise.
Yeah, the Saw franchise.
Yeah.
You think Halloween has...
franchise has got a lot of the wind taken out of it in recent years, in the last, 15 years or so, even though there's a little resurgence with H2O.
Right.
I don't get a good vibe from the movie, and I honestly don't think that most people, the average moviegoer, distinguishes the fact that this is supposed to be a reimagining of Halloween. I think to most people, what is this, like the ninth Halloween movie or something like that?
I'm not positive, but I think so.
After that many movies, I don't think people are able to distinguish the difference anymore. I actually am not able to distinguish the difference. Why do that? Why reimagine this movie? Even with a director that I like Rob Zombie, I think he's talented as far as making horror movies go. I like both his movies that I've
seen. Oh, absolutely.
But why do this? I don't understand it.
Well, the fans, I think you're automatically put in such a tough spot when you try to do something like this, because your fans ask for a new take on it, and then they refuse any new take you have. So, at every turn, Rob Zombie has had to go back and say, no, we are using the theme. Don't believe people that say that we're not using the Carpenter music theme. It's in there. And, it's on and on. It's a barrage of stuff. And it's quite a predicament. But I think that if anyone can make that fresh for a new generation, I think Rob Zombie is the one to do it.
No, I agree with that. But I would have liked to have seen another original film from Rob Zombie, because you're damned if you do, damned if you don't with a movie like this. It doesn't matter, like you said, what you do. You are going to piss off like a lot of hardcore fans with this kind of movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, at the end of the day, no matter what you change, no matter if you keep things the same or if you reimagine things, it's Halloween 9. It doesn't. You can change a lot of things. It's still a guy in a William Shatner mask stabbing girls' tits off. What can you possibly?
And you don't want to see that again?
I don't know. It's just it's more of the same. It just seems so. We've got this year with all these sequels coming out. I can't distinguish the difference between a reimagining and a sequel.
That, but we were talking about Michael Bay earlier. He's producing, I think, a new Friday the 13th is on his slate.
Oh, they've been talking about that for years. Quentin Tarantino was at one time attached to do a new Friday the 13th.
Yeah, so here's my question. If Tarantino did a new Friday the 13th, would you think it had a better shot of being new and original and unique?
I think it would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it would be a lot of fun. But new and original and unique, as far as Tarantino's career goes, yes, it would be exciting, like Jerry just said. But it would still be a slasher movie. You're not elevating... I don't see how you can elevate that genre any further. The genre hasn't been elevated. It's been proven over and over again that there's nothing more to add to this genre. Whereas, thrillers and dramas and comedies, you can always kind of reimagine it. Slasher movies are slasher movies. It's one guy walking around, and particularly Friday the 13th, that's the bottom of the barrel, really.
Right.
It's just a guy walking around with an axe, chopping heads off.
Isn't the joy of slasher movies, though, that they are so predictable and they do follow that formula?
Yes, that's a good point. I don't know how much... I don't... Yeah, I'm curious about Halloween, but I don't know about Friday the 13th. It just seems like you're recycling just so much that what can you do? What is the newest thing that you can bring to the?
You know, I don't know that I'm looking for someone to reinvent the wheel with slasher movies.
I don't see how you can.
I think that it would be interesting to throw a really exciting, visionary director on what is typically such an awful genre of films. I mean, that would be a really interesting experiment. And maybe that's what we're going to see with Halloween.
That's what Grindhouse was, though, wasn't it? I mean, those movies are...
Yeah, yeah.
They're both close to slasher. You know, they're both about one notch away from a slasher movie in several respects.
Gentlemen, let me ask you this then. Because I was reading about this weekend with just reading about De Palma, but he made some comments at the time when Dress to Kill was released, was also released the same summer of The Shining, and Kubrick had never entered the horror movie genre before, but with this one he did. Do you want someone like that to come into the horror genre?
Well, first of all, Jerry, there is no one like
that. No, there is, but I'm saying, do you want someone like, let me pick out, oh, God,
you're opening up a whole can of worms.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, is that what you're looking for, though, something like that?
I think Tarantino would be the perfect personality of director, because I think more than anything, a slasher film needs a director with a personality, needs someone fun, needs someone that knows how to have fun with a film. I don't think it needs to be handled deadly serious.
Oh, no, not at all.
From a philosophical perspective, which I think would be the kind of Friday the 13th Kubrick would make. And I never thought that I'd say that in a sentence, but that's my take on it.
But he did that with Death Proof. I would think he got all his yayas out with Death Proof that he doesn't really want to do. He wants to do the Men on the Mission movie, his Where Eagles Dare, finally.
Yeah, you're right.
He came out and denied and shot down the Friday the 13th rumors pretty quick.
Yes, right. He did. I was surprised how quickly.
We're talking hypothetically here, but I mean, I can see what you mean. It would be very exciting, but I think it would be a step back for him as a director.
What about Tarantino, which I think he's expressed interest, what about Tarantino directing a Bond movie?
Well, he talked about that for back right after Pulp Fiction came out, right before Jackie Brown. He had talked about this in the mid-90s, about doing Casino Royale set in the 60s, and he claims he was burned by the Broccolis when Casino Royale did come out finally. But,
right.
You know, everyone, I mean, even Sean Connery said, why don't you get a John Woo or a Tarantino to direct the next Bond? Scorsese was attached for a Bond movie at one
Spielberg
time.
Spielberg even said he'd want to do one.
Excuse me?
Spielberg has even expressed interest in a Bond movie.
Yeah, but can I say something? I don't think any of these directors, even though they say that, they would never be given the creative control they're used to.
You're right.
You're absolutely right.
And I do not see someone like Tarantino listening to Barbara Broccoli. I just don't see it.
Yeah, you're right. The Broccolis, they don't want anyone to met. They like that formula.
Yeah.
And I don't care who you are. I don't care what you say. Casino Royale, while people liked it and people said it was a fresh Bond movie, maybe it was fresh, but it's not that different from the other Bond movies.
It's different for Daniel. I think in the character of the Bond itself, it's different.
I think I was the only person that did not quite like it.
No, you were not the only person, Jamie.
Okay, good.
If anything, I thought it was less exciting than the other Bond movies, and I don't particularly care for Bond movies. But I've seen many, many of them, if not all of them, and it was a lot of card playing from my seat.
Yeah, and I think the main problem I had was, why do we like Bond? Because we want to be Bond. We want to be that sophisticated and suave and debonair and the lady killer and the actioneer, and most of those qualities were out of that interpretation of James Bond in this league.
Well, I didn't get that at all from this one. But no, I mean, I can see that from a perspective, but I didn't really get that at all from this
one. It takes the fun out of James Bond. And I think that's the main thing that people get off on from James Bond films. You know, it was so dour and so serious.
That's what the books were. And that's even what the early Sean Connery, and that's even what the George Lazenby ones was. And what the Timothy Dalton ones were, that serious return to Ian Fleming.
Yeah, that doesn't work for me. And
I know it doesn't work for you. I'm just saying that.
And the most classic Bond movie, what do they say it is? It's Goldfinger. And Goldfinger has quite a bit of that humor and that debonair quality and that charm.
I would have to disagree. I would say From Russia with Love and On Her Majesty's Secret Service.
Are the most renowned Bond movies?
On Her Majesty's Secret Service has gained in stature, but I would have to say From Russia with Love is probably the most classic example of Bond.
And really, among fans of the book, I've talked to several. I've never read one of the books, but I know quite a few people who have, and they tell me that Casino Royale is very close to the books.
It is.
Very much like what Ian Fleming...
The last line, especially. The bitch is dead.
Right.
And that is as good, that's as close as you're going to get, but that's pretty hardcore to what Ian Fleming had in mind.
Well, anyway.
that's exactly why they'll never get an Oliver Stone who wanted to do it at one time, and a Steven Spielberg and Scorsese, because these guys are not happy just, you know, running a cookie cutter machine.
No, I couldn't see any of the directors we name would never be happy taking orders from these people.
No, and they would be taking orders.
Yeah, you would have to. There's no way around it.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, you guys ready for our flick picks of the week to close out the show?
Yeah. Who wants to go first?
Always silence for that question.
I know. Why is that? What the hell? I mean, it's not like this isn't like the last man standing or whatever. I mean, come on.
Oh, I'm raising my hand. I actually have to speak out. This is the radio. I'm sorry. I'll go first. You remember the 80s, during that whole period in the 80s when there was a whole slew of drug and drug rehab-related films, Less Than Zero and Bright Lights,
Clean
Big City.
Sober.
Yeah, yeah. Well, thanks, dude. That's my flick pick of the week.
Sorry, my bad.
You know, out of all of those movies, this was the one that got the least amount of attention, Clean and Sober. And for my money, I like all of those movies, but this is the most kind of mature, enjoyable one for me. It stars Michael Keaton and M. Emmett Walsh and Morgan Freeman and Kathy Baker. It's a great cast, and it's a very good film. And anyone that mourns the passing relevance of Michael Keaton now, because I still think he's one of our top actors, and he's not used at all, and that's such a shame. But look at Clean and Sober. I think that's his best performance.
That's a good choice.
It's an incredible film.
Okay, Chris?
All right, my choice is Apocalypto, actually, because there was all this talk about it, and I didn't get to see it in the theater, and some people liked it. It got pretty good reviews, but there was all this, brouhaha at the time, and I think that kind of overshadowed the fact that it's a really enjoyable, entertaining movie. There's not a lot there as far as, there's not a lot of historical relevance or anything. It's not trying to tell anything in particular about this society. But there is some relevance to, modern-day societies. It's just a really watchable movie. You get involved with these characters, and you see this sweet, innocent tribe get taken to this decadent, overblown society, and they kind of are looking at themselves 200 years down the line.
Right.
Really entertaining.
No, it was very entertaining. That's a good choice, because it didn't last as long as people thought in the theater.
He's a fantastic action director, actually.
Yeah, as far as I have no love for Mel Gibson, and I think that the whole thing that happened is very, very embarrassing for him and very embarrassing for anyone that likes his movies and things like that. It's unfortunate that whole thing happened. It's just horrible. That said, this movie is extremely watchable and very fun. I had a great time watching it.
Okay, hey, gentlemen, we have a caller from your neck of the woods. I'm going to patch him through.
Okay.
Hi, 863, you're on the air?
Yes, I just wanted to say one thing. Moonraker.
Well, there you go. Or the Ben Affleck one and James Hunt, Moonraper, but yes.
I know I'm getting a little late on that, but...
No, that's cool. No, that's very cool.
Hey, is this Dave?
It sure is, Jamie. How you been, bud?
Hey, how are you doing, man?
Very well.
So, Moonraker, is that your favorite Bond movie, or are you just pulling our legs?
It's the first time I got to pull your legs for all your intellects out there. But no, Moonraker for the time, Gene Shalit. Big thumbs up on that one.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and he's like toes up now. Isn't he the one that just passed away?
No, that's Joel Siegel.
Oh, okay.
Joel Siegel.
My God, Jamie, come on, man. Show some respect for the dead.
I know. I'm terrible. I'm
you
sorry.
You are terrible. I mean...
That was awful. I'm sorry, but... okay. Well, thanks,
Kubrick
thanks for calling,
directing, Kubrick directing Jamie in a remake of Moonraker.
I'd go get the cryogenic materials right now and dig that and get that going.
Pretty sure
silent movie
would be over.
It'll be beautiful.
Yes.
Thank you, man.
Thank you.
All right, guys. Jamie, give me a call later.
I will.
Okay.
I hope you guys are all surviving the post-Sopranos fallout. There's been a lot of crying and sobbing going on in the world.
Yeah, it's been tough.
Yeah, it's been really rough, man.
We've gotten some therapy, so we're okay.
Okay.
Glad to hear it.
Thank
all right,
you,
guys.
Man.
Have a good one.
Okay,
you
cool.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay,
Jared,
I have
your flick pick.
Well, wait, we have a caller from the 717. Do we want to...
Yeah, patch
let's take them through. I mean, all right, my flick pick, by the way, if you got Meatballs with Bill Murray, new DVD, it's the summer, I want to have fun, I've been talking about De Palma all week, and that's all I'm thinking about. I have 9 DVDs in my hand from De Palma, but on the other hand, I have Meatballs, just... Meatballs, like it was Bill Murray, okay?
Meatballs, so you don't have to say anything else.
No, each camper will hunt and kill their own bear. It just doesn't matter. What more do I need to say? Okay, let's get to 717. 717,
hey,
you're on the air.
Hey, it's Ty. What's going on, guys?
Hey, Ty, what's up, man?
Hey, I just have a few things. I know you're pressed for time. Let me get it in.
That's all right,
bud. Talking about Robert Redford. He is awesome, but you guys got to talk about The Clearing. That movie blew. I mean,
well,
that's the one with Helen Mirren, right?
Yeah, Helen Mirren. I just thought it was awful. Second point, Vanilla Sky, you guys are right. It's very, very underrated. I thought Vanilla Sky was incredible. My last point, and it is something for you to watch, it's actually a new TV series. It's called The Bronx is Burning, and John Turturro is in it, and he is awesome in everything he does. He plays
a
former coach of the New York Yankees, and from the previews, he just looks like a... He's going to be a machine.
Is that an ESPN show?
It is.
Yeah,
oh, okay.
John Turturro's done, I think he did like, I don't think it was for ESPN, but he played Howard Cosell in a previous
right.
TV. Yeah, he's very involved in sports, it seems.
Yeah, so that's all I have to say, and I love the show, guys.
Hey,
thank you so much, man.
Ty. Thank you.
All right, man.
Do we have anything else to say about Meatballs?
Well, I mean, you know, I want to talk about, actually, you know, speaking of John Turturro, I mean, even he did, like, a lot of wonderful things with, in the Transformers, I thought. He was having a field day. It just looks like he's happy. You know, he knows that this is a bunch of BS. He doesn't care about Megatron or the fan club thing or whatever.
Yeah.
He's just having a great time. But you know what performance I got to give him? Going back to Quiz Show, he's great in Quiz Show.
Oh, yeah.
He sure is.
Oh, yeah.
No, but you're right. In Transformers, he is an island in a sea of diarrhea there.
Okay, I'm not going to go there, but if you want to, that's fine.
I'm sure he'd love that compliment.
Yeah, I don't know what he'd say about that.
All right, so everybody be on the lookout for the blogs during midweek. We might be adding some midweek shows here and there to accommodate some guests in the near future. So be on the lookout and... we'll keep you posted on it, and certainly the content of next Sunday's show as well.
Hey, also, this week, I don't know, Joshua will be expanding in some cities and more markets. That's coming out, but there's also something else. It's opened in New York and Los Angeles last week, but Werner Herzog's Rescue Dawn is expanding. And this is an important film. First of all, it has Christian Bale, who just seems can do no wrong, in his career, but the idea that Werner Herzog's take on his documentary Little Dieter Needs to Fly, and also he seems to have made like The Thinking Person's Uncommon Valor and First Blood Part 2.
Yeah, which any other version of those two movies would have to be The Thinking version.
Herzog and Steve Zahn were on Shootout, and it was really, they showed several clips from the movie, and it looks really, really good.
Yes, it does.
I hear it's very good. And I think it seems like it's Steven Zahn's first adult performance.
You didn't think National Security was? Okay, I'm just...
All right, Mr. Meatballs.
All right, yeah. You didn't think... what was that other movie he was in? Oh, I don't think... Happy Texas? Okay.
Yeah, we'll cover Steve Vaughn next week.
Okay.
Well, thanks, everybody, for listening. We appreciate it. And if you have any suggestions for the show, any guest requests, any topic requests, just drop us a line at MovieGeeksUnited@yahoo.com or on our MySpace page, MySpace.com/MovieGeeksUnited. And like we said at the beginning of the show, make sure you drop by the Dead Air Show site, both on MySpace and on Blog Talk Radio, and do your best to support them as well.
That's right.
Thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, everyone, have a great week. Thank you.